Welcome to our Memories of School series as part of the Bowden Education podcast. In these podcasts, we'll be asking people to think back to their school days and the memories, both good and bad, that they have. In this edition of Memories of School, I'm speaking to David Gumbrell. David has over 25 years experience in education, including 7 years as a head teacher of a junior school. He's now working as an education consultant and also in initial teacher education. David is passionate about keeping the best early career teachers in the profession. And with this mission, he created the Resilience Project, a series of materials to encourage teachers to look after themselves in order to allow them to be the best teachers that they can be. David also has a range of publications on the topic. Welcome, David. Are you ready to go back to school?
Well, I'm trying to think back that far, to be honest. But I'm going to give it a good try.
It wasn't that long ago, I'm sure. So my first question is, thinking back to school and your school days, are there any memories for you that particularly stand out?
Well, it was really interesting when I kind of considered this question, because actually I described it as scuffed shoes and winter shorts when I first thought about it. And when I asked my mum about my kind of school days, or where she recounts that to my children to try and embarrass me, she goes, "Oh, Dad used to wear shorts in the winter." That's kind of a thing. It's become a kind of a family myth, I guess. But the funny thing is that the reason behind it was that I was big time into my football. So I was one of those boys who played on the playground and didn't really care if I celebrated by scraping my knee along the tarmac. So I used to come home with holes in my trousers on regular occasions, to the point where my mum put me in shorts to say, basically, if you're going to roll around on the floor, then your knees are going to get smashed to pieces. So I didn't do quite so many celebrations after that, once that had happened. And then the scuffed shoes kind of goes along with that, because I used to like exactly the same pair of shoes every single time. So that kind of back to school moment when you go and get your school shoes, it was off to Clark's to be measured, because you have to have the right shoes, obviously. When you come from a Gumbrell household, you have to have the right shoes. And So I also wanted not only the right shoes, but I also wanted exactly the same shoes every time. And then I did exactly the same to those shoes every time. Was basically ruined them within a week, by scraping them on the tarmac of the playground by playing football. And that goes back to me being a head teacher, because I allowed them to change into their trainers for playtimes, because I didn't want them to get done by their mums as much as I got done by my mum.
Or told off yourself by their mums, I'm sure.
Which is quite funny. And yeah. Then the other memory I kind of think of was that I used to think that intelligence was quantity and not quality. So in maths at primary school, I remember feeling very proud that I was on book 5 of the work that I'd completed in that particular academic year. And that was a thing, you know, and I used to work unbelievably hard to do more. And I measured how well I was doing by how many books I got through. And unfortunately, none of my teachers actually challenged that as a complete ridiculous nonsense.
and the fact that you got nothing right.
I did get quite a few right. So I did process a lot of stuff, and I did maths quite quickly, because we didn't really have differentiation, I don't think, at that point. And we certainly didn't have adaptive teaching. It was whether you could do it or you couldn't do it. So I was doing vast quantities of copying out sums and making them do the right things. So that's a really strong memory of mine, that, you know, book 5 could be improved and book 6 could be even better. And I guess that I've always been curious and still remain curious. I'm intellectually curious, and I still love knowledge, and I love exploration, and I love kind of going out there. And my memory of primary school was very much that. So I was allowed to explore. I was allowed to find my way. Secondary school, less so. A-levels, none. And then I only got it back again at degree level when I did a training, did my teacher training at Brighton. And that was the days where there were kind of inspirational teachers who could teach you in new and wonderful ways. And so I guess I have to thank my primary school for kind of investing that curiosity in me and that love of learning and, you know, just supporting my kind of natural curiosity in life. I think I was just a very happy, lucky little boy that worked hard, played hard, and just life was good at primary school. I mean, secondary school was a different kettle of fish, in as much as, you know, academic life started kicking in a little bit harder and football wasn't quite so cool, and other things. But my memory of secondary school is the stratification of my secondary school. It was the hierarchy of setting and how powerful and pervasive that was. And in my teenager brain, it didn't really make sense, and I was on the right side of it, as in I was a one, which kind of indicates that I was in the upper echelons of such hierarchy. But looking back at it, I get very frustrated with myself that I was so pleased that I was in A1 and kind of authoritarian because I was in A1 and looking down on others who weren't in A1. And I kind of get myself down about that. And then I think, wow, how pervasive was this system of setting? Mm. And what must it have felt like if you weren't in A1? Yeah, I was at the bottom of the top, if that makes sense. I was that kind of one that I was in I was always the bottom of my class and had that psychological battle.
Where
I thought I was, partly that, but also that battle of thinking I wasn't clever, but being told that I was clever enough, or I was clever if I looked at a wider context, but I was always bottom of my class.
Yeah, and that's quite hard, isn't it? And, you know, there's always those people that say, oh, you're better to be top, you know, of a lower set or whatever than bottom of a higher set. I don't know. But I also think it's really restrictive because thinking back, and I can remember exactly the same feelings about being in which set you were in, but they're always set by the core subjects. So yeah. If you're being good at English and maths, you make it in the top set for everything. Yeah, actually, what about the kids that aren't, but could be really good at something else, a different subject? And it's really weird how you'd have top set kids doing PE together set when probably they weren't the best at PE at all.
Well, I definitely agree with that. And I'm 100% certain that if I was stratified according to my art ability, I would be in Z grade, an A grade of any description. So I completely understand that. And I wasn't really an A grade scientist either, but I seemed to get into that stratification as a result of that. So I guess I guess it's that magic of hindsight, where you think, why did I live within this system? But then also thought, well, I didn't really have much say. I didn't have anything to compare it to. Whereas now I have. And so looking back on it, I can see it now. But I didn't realise how strongly it's affected me.
Yeah, and I suppose it's something we all live in most, because most schools do this, particularly secondary schools. But even down to primary schools, you know, we have tables of ability, if that's, you know, how you want to call it. And I can remember my youngest son asking me why he's not on the top table, and they know, and I think that was like year one or something, and we were at parents' evening. I said, well, why don't you ask? And And basically, the reason he wasn't on the top table was kind of more a behaviour strategy than anything else. Yeah. And you think, but all of this is going on in children's heads, isn't it? About how good they are or how worthy they are. And I think it comes down to that, about not necessarily how good, but their self-worth. And it must be hard to kind of be stuck somewhere where you feel you can't do better. And how does that impact you as you move into sort of becoming a young adult?
I think it has a huge impact, and I think we dilute it down and we name it different things. I mean, you know, the circle table and the pentagon table, the more size a shape has got, the cleverer the kids, generally speaking. You know, it's not difficult to work it out. And I think pupils are aware of it, regardless of how we dress it up in, you know, sides of shapes or different colours of the rainbow. Kids are aware of it, but I think there's a difference between being aware of it and it being slapped in your face. And I think that we're going to find that difficult to rationalize out, really, as to how we address this issue, because it's still pervasive in our education system now, and my children are going through it now, and they are also stratified and benefiting from stratification, I guess. But maybe in 20 years' time, they're going to be doing a podcast and remembering their days, going, I wish my parents hadn't put me through a school system that was so hierarchical.
So overall, how are your experiences of school, if you were to sum it up in a nutshell?
Overall, I loved school. It was an opportunity to find stuff out and have people to guide me to find stuff out. It's happy memories right up until A-level, really. That's when it all went horribly wrong. It had a temporary blip, as I now of course describe it. But at the time it went horribly wrong. But it was exploration, it was fun, it was enjoyment, it was everything I kind of would have wanted it to be, really. I wanted to please my teachers, and generally my teachers were pleased with me. And that seemed to work quite well, really. I was the guinea pig GCSE year, so I benefited hugely from the coursework element of it, because I was a hard worker over time rather than a crammer for exams. But being that guinea pig year didn't help me for my A-levels, because what they hadn't done is they hadn't changed the A-levels to map to the GCSEs. Now, whereas the GCSEs were a different form of learning that suited me beautifully, A-levels, they then came like a juggernaut at me, and I was running down the wrong way down a motorway with this juggernaut coming towards me, because nobody had ever taught me how to write an essay. And here I was going into essay-based subjects, regardless of pretty much what you took, other than math. That's a whole nother story. but I wasn't able to write an essay, and nobody ever thought that would be a useful technique to teach somebody. And why would you ever want to teach that to somebody who'd been so successful at GCSEs, not realizing that there was a massive gap there that I didn't close. That's why A-levels didn't go very well. And I thought that I'd do a non-essay subject just to kind of cover the bases sort of thing. So I took on A-level maths, which was the worst education decision I've ever made, and remains so. I think A could stand for a whole lot of things, but I'm not sure it's advanced. I just think it's abstraction of reality, and it was just so far away from reality. I it was like teaching me, well, when I used to learn Latin at secondary school, it was completely distant, non-relevant, and I didn't get it. So that kind of compounded the issue. So A-levels wasn't my best moment, Catherine.
But lovely memories of school prior to A-levels.
Yeah, it was all going swimmingly up until that point. And I was gliding along and having a lovely time. I loved the breadth of the curriculum. I was okay at most things, which is arguably why I'm a primary school teacher. But when it came down to specialist knowledge, that's where the gap started to form.
Okay, I'm not going to delve into your specialist knowledge now, but I am going to ask you if there was someone in particular from school, it might be a teacher, it could be someone else, who influenced your thinking or has had an impact on perhaps how you live your life or all the decisions you've made.
Wow, I mean, so many to choose from and which one to go for. I mean, it was a long, primary school was a long time ago, so recalling names of primary school teachers seems, it's just in a childhood blur, which is a lovely blur, and I didn't really want to dig too deeply to find any names within it. So I didn't go back to my parents to ask about that one. But there was an English teacher who was transformative. And this kind of echoes back to a lack of ability in English, which seems strange for a published author, doesn't it? But at that point, it wasn't looking good. And his name was Mr. Clucas, and he was a very old man in my teenager view. I'm not quite sure how old he was in reality.
Probably about 40.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, because 40-year-old men look really old. And I don't know how old he actually was, but he received a piece of work from me, and it was a poem about a penguin of all things, and I'm not quite sure why I was writing a poem about a penguin at all, really. I guess there was a strange title that I was trying to write too, but he loved it. And he told me he loved it, and he told me it was transformative, and he told me it was a turning point, and he made me believe that I could write, and he made me believe that this could be the moment and that my whole education could change from this point. Well, that's how I remember it. I'm pretty sure it's not like that. I may have just got my best mark at that up until that point. But that penguin changed my career, really, as in it suddenly made me believe in myself. And my parents are, to this day, grateful to that man. And to this day, say that he is the reason why I've been successful in my secondary school career. And I wanted to say thank you to him and did try to track him down, but I didn't manage it. I found the school. I asked the school, but unfortunately, by that point, he had passed away. So I never got to tell him, and that's a regret, but I've always treasured the kind of thought of him. And then the second person echoes back to the story that I told earlier, which is my university lecturer at Brighton, because I managed to get to university despite not being able to write an essay, and I scraped through my first essay and I got, I don't know, let's say a low 50 score, and then I batted in another low 50 score, and things weren't looking good. And my parents were starting getting worried that they'd invested a huge amount of money in a dead horse. But they were trying to back me. And then I just went to this lady. I think her name was Katrina Fry. I went to this lady and I said, okay, I'm in trouble there. I can't write an essay and I'm at university. Help. And she just sat down and said, okay, let's do it. And she just opened her door, opened her heart, guided me. And I jumped 30% thanks to what I believe was her advice. And I stayed at that level for the remainder of my university.
Wow. And I wish I'd gone and asked someone for help, because when I was at university, I was the 50 percenter as well. I got the occasional random higher mark, but that was sort of more out of luck. But I was the perpetual 50 percenter. I didn't quite know what I needed to do to get better, but I think I'm only just learning how to write now.
I think I was lucky. I think that I seek people out and surround myself with people that are able and willing to go the extra mile to guide you and support you. And I think that's what I was able to do. And so I found my Katrina and I found my Mr. Klukas. And as a result of those two people, I believe that I got myself back on the right track and succeeded where I needed to succeed. And yeah, always grateful to those two people. Maybe I should track down Katrina Fry after this, before that's too late as well.
Yes. I always say as well to those that are going into teaching that you'll have an impact on so many people's lives that you'll never know about, but you have to just make an assumption that you do and you will. And because at the time, as children, no one really stops and, you know, thanks their teacher, do they, about the impact? Or maybe they don't yet know the impact that you know the teachers had on their lives. But I always say to students that you will have impact on children's lives, for good or otherwise. You'll be remembered.
And I think that is true. I just think we are guilty of not telling people this stuff. And I think that it's great that we can have, you know, opportunities like this to make sure that we kind of acknowledge these people and acknowledge these moments. I recently did some training and it was incredible because I was teaching geography teaching teachers how to teach geography. And I stood in front of the class and I was talking about, you know, when I was at school, we used to do these amazing lessons in One World Week. And we got a country given to us and a geographical thing, and we had to put them together and be creative about it. And I got Japan and earthquakes. And I knew nothing about Japan or earthquakes, but I kind of made them come together. And I taught this lesson and I got really into Japanese earthquakes, and the kids got under the table and I shook the tables. And then I told them about the earthquake scale, and we lined up outside and I took a register as if it was a fire drill in this country. And this guy put his hand up and he went, "I know about this lesson." And I went, "Pardon? I know about this lesson. My wife remembers that lesson because she was in it. And when I came into teaching, she said, be like Mr. Gumbrell, because Mr. Gumbrell taught this lesson and then recounted the Japanese earthquake story to him. He came into teaching and then by some sheer fluke managed to sit into one of my classes where I was talking about said lesson." And he just put his hand up. He went, "Oh, so you're Mr. Gumbrell, are you?"
Oh, that's such a cool moment though, isn't it? That the world is so small, but that's so nice that the kind of dots have been joined. And
yeah,
how it's nice.
Rare occasions where the dots were joined.
Yeah.
And I didn't join the dots with Mr. Klukas, but I hope he believes that he did a good job, because he did for me. And he may not have done it for everyone, and none of us can do it for everyone, but that's where the dots were joined. And for me, it was the most magical moment of my teaching career to date, where I just suddenly realized that things that I created, things that I taught, could stay with someone and inspire their husband to join the profession that I love. And then for him to come and tell me that was just unbelievable.
I bet he got straight on his phone afterwards as soon as he got home, said, "You never guess what? This has happened. Because he would have been just as excited, and I'm sure his wife would then been just as excited. And I think those moments are wonderful.
That's what's so exciting about it, is that it kind of was a moment in time where there was mutual joy of that educational moment.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so magical. So I'm going to make a promise to myself that I'm going to connect with Katrina Fry and try and track her down.
Yeah.
In a very positive, professional way, I mean.
No, I also had a hand up moment just before we move on to the last question, just because it will make you laugh, because I had a hand up moment when I was It's a good few years ago, but I was in teacher education, teaching a PGC. It was 14 to 19, and I was talking about trips, and we were doing, you know, the importance of taking students out on trips, but also how, you know, challenging they can be, that they're not sort of jollies. And I recounted at that time a story, a bit like you.
Yeah.
A trip that I'd taken the students on, it's to Euro Disney.
Yeah.
And part of this story was around that we were sharing a hotel with another school group, and they were a nightmare, and we had to take it in shifts in the corridor, sitting outside, because, you know, they kept knocking on our students' doors and da 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 da. That's the hand went up then. The student sat in my class said, "I was a kid in the other school group." So not such a magical moment. But he said, "I remember it was us, and it was a school from Wales." And he had that moment where he went, "I was one of those other kids that you were sat in the corridor about."
Wow.
Yeah. I said, "We'll talk later." You owe me.
Yeah. It's so hard to, when you're kind of joining in with two school groups and you've got your own rules and your own subset of rules, and then another school group come in on that. So I get that. I've led a lot of school trips, and those moments are tricky, aren't they?
But it was so funny that it was so many years before, and he just his hand just slid up. Yeah. And I just assumed it was a question, and it was one of them.
Hey, that is good. I like that.
It does make me laugh. So on that note, I'm going to go and ask you the last question now. So we've talked about lots of lovely things about school, some challenges. But if I was to give you a magic wand and say, "David, if you could change one thing about your school experience, and you can do one thing with your magic wand, what would you have changed? It could be about school, it could be about you, your attitude, but what would you change and why?"
Wow. So many things I'd want to change. I mean, the obvious one is learn how to write an essay a little bit earlier, but that's kind of obvious, and I don't want it to be that. I still believe that the glory days of primary school can be continued further and deeper into secondary school, and that gradual iterative erosion of my curiosity and interests, and the ebbing of that, it doesn't need to happen. And I was lucky, it was a long time ago, and I think it's happening more and more and more now than it ever was then. I just want curiosity to be nurtured more. I wish my curiosity was continued to be nurtured more in my secondary school. And looking at the way that my children are taught, curiosity is not a thing. They just do it, and they just get on with it, and they get taught how to write an essay, mechanically, how to write an essay, and then they succeed in that way. But I'm an old romantic when it comes to kind of knowledge and interest and curiosity, and I know how motivating it can be. And I want others to know how motivating and engaging it can be. And when we're talking about fighting behavior and the difficulties of behavior, and stress of teachers and stress of children, I think it's easily fixed. Let's just slow down. Let's run on their timescales. Let's run on their interests. We wouldn't have half the problems that we seem to be having. So I would want my magic wand to increase the time where we are pupil-driven, genuinely pupil driven, because I know that I was at my best, and I am easily motivated, very easily motivated. I know that. But I believe all people are motivated if they can follow things that are interesting to them. And I think we miss a trick where we think they're interesting, but they might not. And we might think they're relevant, but they might not. And we might think that exams are useful, but they might not. But what is useful is to have a love of learning, a love of the world in which we live, and a curiosity that is insatiable to the point where I can't get enough of stuff still. And I'm a much older man than I previously was.
Wow. Thank you so much for taking us back. It's a privilege to listen to people taking us back to their school days. And I'm going to leave you to go and join your dots.
Thank you. I'm going to go and join them now.